fight me. Yeah, man, I trot this one away. Man, I move with John the Almighty. We know the power then the pan.
KUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
Number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Virginia, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's show, we are featuring audio from three prisoners, one of whom was recently granted parole. Today, you'll hear from Muti Ajamu Asebro, a longtime correspondent with our show, who called in late November to record the piece we are airing today. Then you'll hear from Christoph Lewis, who recently got parole and whose work we have aired on the show before. Finally, we will share some audio from Lucas, an inside correspondent from Bordeaux. First up is Muti Ajamu Asebro. For those of you who have not heard of Muti, he was sentenced to life without parole as a teenager in Pennsylvania. Decades later, he is still incarcerated and has become a jailhouse lawyer and advocate for other prisoners, especially those sentenced to life as children. He founded an organization on the outside called Juveniles Are Us, which he talks about in this piece. This speech was written for the opening address of a convergence that happened in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in November 2021. The convergence was called Freedom, Land and Abolition, and it was an all-day event honoring Black urban farmers and abolitionists in Pennsylvania and beyond, and celebrating the release and vision of Russell Maroon Schoetz. Russell Maroon Schoetz was a former Black Panther and Black Liberation Army member who was released from prison this past fall and sadly died on December 17, 2021. The call-out for the convergence read, quote, "This convergence aspires to reunite two strong social movements, urban farming and abolition. Our struggles to abolish the police state and to reclaim urban land for organic agriculture converge on what we call the eco-socialist horizon. We understand eco-socialism as a vision of revolutionary transformation, which emerges from the unity of our struggles to free the land and our communities from racial, patriarchal, and economic oppression." Here is Muti's opening speech for the convergence.
Convergence, growing courts, food, and minds for our children. Uhuru sasa da da dugu. That means freedom now, sisters and brothers. Hotep to the Vanguard Party. Convergence. We are here as an act of convergence. The root word of convergence is verge, meaning going to the brink, right at the edge of a thing or an event. To converge is to meet up at the brink, to come together. So we saw a dire need in the community and a void in leadership, and was compelled to come together. Now, after doing so, we have put out the clarion call for you to join us in coming together. Who is the we, you might ask? The we is coming together of movements in court restorative justice and urban agriculture. The organizations in court restorative restoration like Juvenile juveniles are us, the right, the wrong initiative, and the Mike Test Entertainment TV via voice tour. Organizations in urban farming like Mother Africa's Green Scouts and Black Urban Gardeners and Farmers Cooperative of Pittsburgh and other powerful groups. We have come together today because, in the words of the great Chuck D of Public Enemy, we urge to merge for the love of our people to get along. Philly and Pittsburgh, when East meets West, we do the best for our children and our people who are disenfranchised by systemic injustice in the courts of Pennsylvania and by food apartheid in
this
our
is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
In our communities, neighborhoods, and counties. This is the harsh reality we have come together to eradicate. On our side of the convergence court restorative justice, our name, Juveniles, are us, is a question, which is why we write it with a question mark. That is, we rhetorically ask, juveniles, and our answer is our mantra and our mission. No, we are children. Our mission is to free children from prison who are actually innocent with the evidence to prove it, but still have been sentenced to death by incarceration. We force the courts and its agents to acknowledge our children as children by publicly and privately deconstructing the myth of white supremacy. The systemic deconstruction, raising it to the ground until nothing is left but an ash heap, tearing it down brick by stolen brick with full consciousness and deliberate intention, by exposing its first, second, and third degree lies and the clearly expressed thoughts and behaviors of all of its actors and benefactors, highlighting the perpetual black, brown, and poor white child victims of the American courtroom. Whether it's by illegal imprisonment or the legalization of food apartheid by many other names. Then, out of these ashes, let us, in the African spirit of Benue, lead the building of something beautiful for our children of the disenfranchised and the oppressed, the illiterate, homeless, dehumanized, and degraded. Let this convergence be us reaching backwards for clarity to successfully
this
move
is a
forward.
Call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Back to the original model of justice, the oldest paragon of justice called Mayotte, taught to the world by our richly melanated ancestors and lived in harmony for thousands of years in Truhotep, along the banks of the Happy River, cradled in East Kush. We can no longer be under the charge of the courts of their Lady of Justice. It has never worked for their children, nor ours, and it never will. Picture it. Their pallid lady has a sword in her hand and blindfolded on her eyes. A sword does not heal, it only hurts. It only maims or kills. It represents death, not life. And if you give a person a sword and a snug blindfold, then have them swing the sword, it will always give you injustice, unable to see what you are doing and to whom. Blind justice has always been injustice for all. Whereas the great goddess Mayotte has her eyes wide open, and in her hand is no sword, but rather the feather of truth, which all our deeds are weighed against on the scale of justice in the hall of judgment. Thus, you must have the truth in order to dispense justice, and you must see it without sight. You cannot see justice born, arrive, or grow. It was well said by an unknown philosopher that an eye for an eye leaves all of us blind. I must add to that, that wearing a blindfold is the first step to continuing down this wickedly pale devolution into barbarism and what we call ISFID, chaos and confusion, the opposite of justice. Down a road which begets self-destruction and the destruction of all who come before its bar. A bar that currently bars just us from justice. Without sight, one of several prerequisites to discernment, we cannot experience court equity in this life nor the next. The author, Franz Kafka, is world-renowned for writing about the nightmares unfurling in courtrooms, where the most vulnerable of society is put on spectacle as the flesh of their imagination are torn, layer by layer, from the bones of their rights. America's lauded fairness in the court violently clashes with the reality of systemic injustice, ambushing the delusion of possible equity if only we just be nice. While Kafka wrote about America, but he never wrote about America, and the incessant nocturnal terrorism visited upon African people in its courtrooms daily, night and day. But how could he, when France never walked a single step in our shoes, the moccasins of the Lakota Nation, Latinx people, Asian people, and poor whites of Appalachia? Remember, this is a call to convergence, to grow courts, food and minds for our children. So for us, relief to injustice in the courts and striking down food apartheid are inextricably bound to one another. And I would be remiss if I did not highlight that we live, some say only exist, in one of the wealthiest, if not most wealthy, country in the world. Yet millions of children go to bed hungry every night. Hundreds of thousands die of starvation. Some farmers commit the routine and unconscionable cardinal sin of literally pouring fresh, wholesome milk on the ground and down the drain because they could not sell it, throwing in the garbage fresh, ripe, and wholesome produce because they can't sell it. Tons of wholesome and fresh food and milk is destroyed by farmers because they can't profit from it. In the coldest manner, these farmers are saying, if I give it away, what I cannot sell, it would devalue the market, and I will not be able to sell my produce. Utter nonsense. You can't sell the produce and milk, so throwing it in the trash will make people buy what's left. Pour it on the ground before you give it away to the needy, even though there are hundreds of thousands of hungry, homeless, and poor people in orphanages, domestic assault safe houses, elderly homes, houses of worship, homeless shelters that would appreciate having the screams of their hunger pains quieted by the substance that we all need in order to live. Throw it away while food pantries and soup kitchens are always in need of food to restock their shelves and keep their doors open. Sadly, oversight is non-existent. The American Farmers Bureau, specifically, and in USDA in general, do not call these farmers on their emerald carpet and taking them to task for what is a disgraceful practice and behavior in the name of business. Profit over the starvation of our fellow human beings. Severe penalties should be given if an ounce of food or milk are wasted when there are still empty food banks and soup kitchens and other shelters for those locked out. Our solution is to teach people how to grow food. Uhuru, Ubuntu, yes, if you haven't figured it out yet, we are calling you to revolution. Anything short of revolution is time squandered like the proverbial dog chasing its tail. Self-determination is our human right. Kujichakalia or death. Self-destruction or death is the only life for a liberated, independent, and sovereign people. We honor our ancestors by crossing bridges they built, climb ladders crafted by our elders. We stand shoulder rank with true comrades, shield our children, and secure the path for the yet unborn. Ashe, honored to serve, forged to lead, steadfast for love and service. Muti Ajimo Seburu.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. That was audio from Inside correspondent Muti Ajamua-Sebro. To hear more of Muti's writings, you can head over to our website at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com and check out the page specifically for his work. Up next is an interview with Christoph Lewis. Christoph was in the news this past summer and fall because he released video footage of guards in a federal prison attacking and assaulting him without provocation. One of the dozen guards featured in the video was recently charged with assault. We caught up with Christoph to talk about his saga to release the video footage, how he feels about the charges, and what's coming up next for him.
Let me give you all a quick rundown. My name is Christoph Lewis, and I'm a federally incarcerated prisoner carrying out a life sentence. I'm currently being housed in a minimum security institution in Laval, Quebec, where I have been now for 16 months or so. This is a spooky-ass environment, and I'm doing my very best to remain sane. I say spooky because I'm literally surrounded by creeps, and that's neither here nor there. So, let's get it. Talk to me, Virginia. What you want to know?
So, most recently, your name has been in the news because you were beaten by guards in Millhaven in 2012, and you released footage of that incident earlier this year, and you were calling for action to be taken. I'm curious why it took you and your legal team from 2012 to 2021 to ask for charges to be laid in this situation.
So, timing was essentially everything. I mean, I don't come from a laying charges kind of, you know, a laying charges kind of background. So, I don't know if you know what I mean when I say that. So, it took some time for me to convince myself that this was the only option, you know. There's a lot of other processes that prisoners must do in order to start this process of taking action. Like, prisoners are conditioned to resolve every problem at the lowest possible level. So that's obviously a hindrance at times. Then it's the 7 years it took to receive the video footage, which, by the way, was destroyed by CSC, but I was able to have it retrieved by the Correctional Investigator's Office. Finding the right legal representation and support system is obviously a big barrier as well. And how can I leave this out? Money is definitely something that you got to have a little bit of, at least, unless you find legal representation that will take your case pro bono. So, yeah, those are kind of the main reasons. But it was truly a complicated process, filled with many layers of bureaucracy at every level, actually, you know.
Yeah, do you want to tell us a bit more about what that process is like? We've had lots of people on the show talking about how bureaucratic the grievance process is within prison and how unlikely it is for that process to bring the kinds of results that people want. What is the investigative process been like for you?
As I said, it takes a long time for you to get certain things done. There is also the grievance process, which, as most people may know, that follow the Canadian prison system and the tools that prisoners have available to them. There is like 97.7% of grievances are usually denied. I don't know if you'd say fortunate for me, but some have been upheld. It took me, I think, 3 years, no, I think 2.5 years to actually have my grievance upheld. It was actually upheld by Ann Kelly when she was the deputy commissioner, I think was her title at the time. And so when we're doing all that kind of stuff, you have to, because if you try to file something in court right off the bat, you'll get shut down because they'll say, like, you have to follow all the processes that are below the courts. So essentially you have to cross all your T's and dot all your I's, you know?
And in your situation, those T's and I's are things like institutional grievances?
Well, they were.
Right.
And they still are, actually, because, I mean, when something transpires now, because things are still happening to this day, I have no choice. I'm compelled to write grievances, and that's my only form of really standing up for myself without being combative. So I tend to have to write grievances and things of that nature. So, yeah.
So the latest news with the situation from the guards beating you up in 2012 in Millhaven is that charges have been laid against one of the guards. And I'm curious how you feel about that. Like, did you think something like this would happen? What is it like to hear news like that?
I definitely didn't think charges would be laid. Not if we, you know, we let history tell it. Definitely not. But am I happy with charges being laid? No, I mean, I think you should say lack thereof charges would sound better. I think we should phrase it like that, because literally there was just only one charge, assault with a weapon, and from all the legal scholars that I know, they're like, that charge definitely ain't gonna stick. So to be honest, no. And it's bittersweet. I mean, I've had to continue to relive the traumatic situation, and every time I see it on TV or have to read about it or whatever, it's just like putting salt in the old wound, you know? Like, it's never nice to see someone choke you out, especially on TV. At the end of the day, it's not something I'm happy about, but the lack of charges in the flawed investigation process was more disappointing than anything.
Do you want to talk a bit more about the investigation process? Did people come talk to you before the charges were laid? Did the process seem like it was exhaustive or proper in any way?
I'll just put it like this. It was flawed at best. The investigating officer didn't even ask my legal team if we had any evidence to offer their investigation. Like, I went through my lawyers to get this done because, I mean, I wasn't going to pick up the phone and try to holler at the Ontario Provincial Police or anything. So it all went through my lawyers, and that's how it was done. The investigation was definitely flawed, and that's my perception of it. Even the way they interviewed me, it was sneaky, and it was hella suspect. The interview had me feeling like I was a suspect the entire time. Plus, they called me in such a sneaky way that I was not even able to have my lawyer present, because one of my lawyers was actually in the building at the time when they did their so-called interview. I don't know. I guess people like me that look like me and sound like me are not afforded the right to be a victim, so to speak, especially with my kind of background. So it's my perception on it.
Do you have a sense that the events of last summer potentially made it so that this charge even got laid in the first place? I know you said that often in cases like this, especially when it's Black folks involved, charges are often not laid at all.
Yeah, no doubt.
I know last summer there was a lot more attention on that kind of thing. Do you feel like that affected your situation at all?
Well, I kind of do. I feel like the climate that we're living in right now definitely played a part. Because usually things like this get overlooked, but not just that, the fact that we had direct video footage, it was kind of hard to deny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've seen the video, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it's clear, like, you know, I ain't doing nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even getting into the certain details, but the reason why that happened in the first place was just completely and utterly rooted from prejudice. You know, I'm not even going to say the R word, because honestly, I really don't even like even resorting to that, but I'll just say that I'm assuming that you're talking about the George Floyd situation is what you think basically propelled them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, most definitely. I definitely think so, but I'll more compare this to, like, the Eric Garner case in New York City, if you're familiar with that case.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see, Eric Garner was choked out for selling single cigarettes in New York City. Like, the same chokehold maneuver that they used on me is the same chokehold that they used on Eric Garner, and obviously Eric Garner ain't here. I mean, that chokehold has been abolished for CSC use since 1999, and it wasn't abolished for no reason. Obviously, people died from them choking them out in that manner. So, I mean, yeah, I do feel like the attention that's been garnered around all this brutal force and excessive use of the force has propelled them and compelled them to actually take action.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Now, for years, we've known on this show that when prisoners speak out about violence done to them by guards and by the administration in a prison setting, you open yourself up to really serious consequences. Has that been part of your experience? What kind of consequences have you experienced for taking this step to go public with this information and to be pushing for a charge to be laid or charges to be laid?
Ah, man. What has the backlash looked like, eh? It's been hella crazy, let me just tell you that. A lot has taken place and is still happening to date, you know, from staff harassment to assaults by the paper and pen way, you know. So, you know what they say, the pen is mightier than the sword, so they're trying to kill me with the pen now, because I'm supposing they're not going to try to make the same violent mistakes that led to this entire situation before. So they've implemented, like, a plethora of other tactics now, you know, so there's been so much harassment, honestly. I've had to reach out to sources outside of the institution in an attempt to protect myself. It just got overwhelming. It still is. Like, I mean, I'm going to lay out some things for you later on in the call, but it's some of the institutional staff are seemingly actually trying to ensure that I'm not further mistreated, because I don't believe all of them are feeling what's happening with me. I really don't. I think a lot of them are against it. But I'll just say this, to put it nicely, they are overshadowed and complicit for enabling the bad apples that ruin the bunch, if you know what I mean. Like, even the ones that are trying to speak up, they're not speaking up enough. So they're overshadowed and, in my eyes, complicit for enabling the bad apples that ruin the bunch.
We have had lifers as regular guests on the show before, as hosts on the show before. I know that lifers face a lot of, you know, it's much more difficult to get out on parole, and parole is such a slippery process, and there's so much more leeway for the prison system to keep people inside and not grant people parole. Have you been facing consequences for speaking out in terms of, like, your parole dates getting pushed back and things like that, or has it mostly been, like, this thing you're talking about where, like, interactions with the guards have been pretty intense?
Well, when it comes to parole and all that, I'm not even going to touch that subject because, obviously, I mean, I'm past my parole eligibility, so, I mean, that's a whole nother demon, a whole nother beast. Like, I'm not really even going to get into that because I'm going to read something to you. Matter of fact, I think this is a perfect segue for that. I did some stuff with you guys before. Well, not really with you guys, but I wrote some pieces, and I shared them with the professor that vicariously shared them with you guys. And I'm going to read something that they wrote in my paperwork about this, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to read an excerpt. So it says, "Today he is much more accepting of the way the correctional system works, but he still speaks negatively about it. He talks a lot about systemic racism, the lack of respect for the English language, a system that contributes to an increase in the level of institutionalization, etc. He participated in a workshop about the correctional system. He also participated in a public podcast, open parenthesis, prison radio show, close parenthesis, in which he talks about all the injustices and his negative perceptions of various caseworkers, various CSC caseworkers. While he speaks very negatively about the conditions in incarceration and refers to the people doing the supervising as his quote-unquote captors, he said that his goal was to expose the public to the reality of incarceration and to discourage young people from taking the path of criminality and ending up in a situation like himself." So, just to show you, speaking about the parole boards and stuff like that, this is the kind of stuff that they send to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, when, you know, we speak about, which is something I don't really want to get into right now, but that's the kind of stuff that they send to them to read. Mm-hmm. And how is someone like myself supposed to get a fair shot when you're slandering me with stuff like that, you know? To be completely honest, like, that's why I don't like that word inmate. Because, yeah, we're all in prison. We're all inside. But we're all in prison, but we're not all mates. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm trying to stay away from that word inmate, because honestly, we are all in prison, but we're not all mates. And it's just sad because you got cameras on two legs running around all the time, and people always trying to throw the next man down, even if you're trying to help your own fellow convict, you know? And it's just sad because a lot of the time the institution, they utilize these people, and they just like the streets chews us up and spits us out, same way the institution chews us up and spits us out. They use us to the best of their ability, and then after, they disregard us when they have no use. And that's just the way I feel about it. That's my personal opinion, and I'm sure a lot of other prisoners would feel the same way. I know there's going to be backlash for this. Mm-hmm. I know there's going to be backlash for me talking to people, but it is what it is. Like, I speak it how I see it, you know, and how I feel it. The piece that they're talking about was a piece that I wrote called "The Way I Feel." I specifically said, "The Way I Feel." And I'm sharing that piece with scholars, you know, I'm talking about with academics and so on and so forth. So I'm like, I'm not doing anything illegal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not working with criminals. I mean, if anything, you should be patting me on my back and saying, hey, look, he's doing something constructive with himself. You know what I mean? And he's utilizing the tools available to him, because as far as I know, according to the Charter of Rights, I should still be afforded to some of those rights, because I don't remember the judge ever sending to me and telling me that I don't have no rights. I shouldn't have access to the Charter of Rights no more. That wasn't a part of my sentence. I'm perplexed by all this. I'm like, what's with all this? Like, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't.
So let's get back to talking a bit more about this specific case you've got moving forward. What do you think needs to happen next? Like, what needs to happen moving forward with your case?
Well, for starters, those guards need to be held accountable by way of charges being laid on them, the rest of them. Not no slap on the wrist behind closed door where nobody can see. Public accountability is needed, in my eyes, to ensure to the public that justice has been taken and is taking place and nobody is above the law, right? Because not even their own quote-unquote officers, right? That's how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. And I also think there needs to be a demolition of their system of just us, and that's how I refer to it, because I look at it as a system that they look at everybody from the outside in, and it's just them and everybody else saying shit. That's how I feel about it, my personal opinion. I feel like that needs to be replaced by a real, systemically appropriate system of justice that considers all ethnicities involved by way of extensive research on a grassroots level catered to the demographic of the prison population. I mean, I think reallocation of federal funds to address mental health issues and programs that reflect the demographic of the incarcerated population is another thing that needs to be done. I think sensitivity training for all staff members who work with prisoners on a day-to-day basis, along with an independent source to ensure that the training is being applied correctly. And this, I would like to see accomplished literally, not in a symbolic sense, not symbolically, you know. I just want to say, imagine me and 30 of my friends decide to assault somebody the way I was assaulted. Pepper sprayed, punched, kicked, choked out unconscious, restrained from behind and then yanked upwards, causing my shoulders to be kind of like partially dislocated, and then locked in some windowless cell for weeks on end. We would have been charged with attempted murder or at least multiple aggravated assaults, kidnapping, forcible confinement, and whatever else the police saw fit. Clearly there's two different justice systems, mm-hmm. or should I say systems of just us, right?
You obviously know you're not the only person who's been through a situation like this. Do you have a message for other prisoners who might be in similar situations to you?
In terms of what I'd like to say to others that are in similar situations as myself, first and foremost, you got to stop internalizing injustices because it will start to manifest itself in other ways. I experience it every day, you know, such as anxiety, sleepless nights, stress, sickness, and many other ways. And I implore others to find legal ways to come forward and expose the wrongs being done to them in the dark and confines of the Canadian prison system. Because if you don't, you'll only be emboldening those that are harming you to continue their onslaught on you or someone else. While and out, when a staff member does something you don't like, will get you nowhere fast. You need to learn the laws that govern this land. You need to learn the laws that govern this stolen land, should I say, and apply them accordingly. You don't have to break your moral codes. Do like I did and go through your lawyers or supporters. I mean, the street code and the mentality that we are accustomed to is exactly what those that are harming us is utilizing against us and keeps them winning. Prisoners are their own worst enemies, I believe. We are divided, therefore we are extremely easy to conquer, and that's a fact. This is one of the reasons why I'm cutting that word inmate from my vocab. Because honestly, we are all in prison, but we ain't all mates. And that's real talk, no cap. So, I mean, that's what I feel needs to be done. I would love for people to know that they can contact me at freedomsofmust.net, right? I just want brothers to know, and my sisters too, you know, keep their head up and just keep moving. And they'll try to break you in many different ways, but you got to stay strong. Yeah, so y'all already plugged it last time. You guys aired something about me, or I can't remember what episode it was or what show it was, but he plugged the blog, and they gave me hell for all that when they came and met me and talked to me about it. But, I mean, I'm not hiding nothing. I'm doing all the stuff that I'm doing is legit. I ain't doing nothing wrong. You know what I'm saying? I'm working with nothing but scholars and people, you know, whether it's a senator or professors or other lawyers or different activists. Like, I'm not doing anything that should be frowned upon. So I'm gonna keep pushing, because at the end of the day, I'm trying to just build my community. I'm not trying to destroy it like I once did. So at the end of the day, I feel like they should be in support of all this. And that's how I feel about it, you know. So, I mean, it's motivating to me. These are some of the tools that I use to motivate me, whether it's listening to other people speak, powerful people. There was a brother that one of the first shows I listened to when I came in this prison, it was actually a couple months back, was a brother named Muti that you guys had on the show. That guy is a powerful dude, man. Shout out to Muti. When I heard him speaking on there, he was super motivating. So, I mean, I always wanted to shout him out because, you know, I know he's in a dark place over there because I got family doing time in the States too, so I understand. And I'll just say, like, it's little things like that that empower brothers and sisters to keep their minds strong and keep pushing. So, you know, you need a lot more of that. Mm-hmm. And people that are knowledgeable, too, and know what they're talking about, because you could tell he know what he's talking about. So, you know, I appreciate guys like that, you know. Something else I wanted to say, even when I attempt to utilize legitimate skills that I have garnered throughout my incarceration, you know, skills such as the so-called complaint process and grievance process, or contacting the correctional investigator's office, or court proceedings such as, like, Canadian Human Rights Commission, federal courts, etc., I'm subsequently subjected to harassment in many other forms after that. And to me, this is so disheartening because you would think my overseas would view me utilizing legitimate channels to express my displeasure as proof of just how reformed or quote-unquote rehabilitated I actually am. So realistically speaking, it's quite the contrary. Like, we get treated much worse after using these quote-unquote legitimate terms or alternate ways of dealing with our problems and so on and so forth. I guess this is because these legitimate actions can cause internal problems for them as well. I guess for the staff that are not adhering to their own rules and regulations. So from my vantage point, these so-called legitimate processes only cause further scrutiny and duress to prisoners. That's my personal opinion. I would love to take this opportunity to also address something that has been bothering me for some time now, but recently, okay? A radio co-host on your station said something about lockdowns in Bordeaux prison on air that put salt in an old wound for me, to be honest with you. I'm not going to name them because I'm about to holler at them in a couple of days when they show airs. So I'm going to holler at them. But I'm going to say this. I notice people love to glorify our culture's music, whether it's hip-hop, R&B, reggae, dancehall, reggaeton, or hard rock, or whatever people listen to. Yet some people tend to talk condescendingly about those that get caught up systemically in this so-called justice system. We really need to stop with all that double standard foolishness, because we all bop our heads to music that promotes actions that can lead to imprisonment. So to all those people, I say this. Remember, it's not how you treat those society adores. It's how you treat those that society condemns that truly defines your true character. And that's how I feel about it. And whoever don't like me for that, it is what it is. But I want to say, I always close off saying my parting words, right? Which is just real talk from a real prisoner doing real time in a real systemically racist system. So for me, I just want, like, as I said, I'm going to stop talking, I'm stop saying inmate. That's something I'm trying to take out my vocabulary. So as you can see, it's changed from real talk from a real inmate, now just real talk from a real prisoner doing real time in a real systemically racist system.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. That was audio from Christoph Lewis, who is now on parole. You can check out his writings online at freedomisamust.net. Our final clip for today is from Lucas. Lucas is currently incarcerated in Bordeaux prison, where he has been calling us to record the news from Bordeaux. Here is his latest.
So, yeah, here I am working in the kitchen at the Bordeaux, and as I'm making some chicken legs and everything for everybody in the prison, I end up finding out in the freezer that we're serving chicken legs that have expired from 1 month ago. And the food that we're basically making is pretty much all expired food that's been cooked, frozen, and then recooked. And it is incredibly disgusting. I was so, like, shocked. We ended up throwing out, because there was some that we had to throw out because there was, like, no chance that we were going to make that. and we ended up throwing out like 300 packages of chickens because they were so like disgusting and outdated and everything. And there were some that we actually kept to make. So I am extremely, extremely shocked about the fact that they're serving us food that is expired. And since I found that out, and that was 2 days ago, I haven't been eating the food over here. I've been buying my own food on the canteen and everything, and that's how they're making their money off of us. Because we're buying our canteen, and they're saying that the food that they're serving is freaking expired, so they're going to get people to buy more of their canteen, which is ridiculous, and it shouldn't be allowed at all. And I'm trying to do something about it because I told my lawyer about it, my carceral lawyer, and she's telling me to make a collective complaint, which means basically everyone signs a complaint sheet stating that like this is happening in the kitchen. But obviously not a lot of people are going to do it because they work in the kitchen and they don't want to lose their job because it's still a good job. So like a lot of people don't want to do it and everything, so they shut their mouths about it. But me, I'm not shutting my mouth about this at all. I'm going all the way to the end, and I'm going to find someone to help me out to fight this all the way to the end. And on top of all that, over here in Bordeaux, they're still locking us up like crazy over the holidays. Out of all the holidays from the 23rd of December all the way till today, we were in lockup pretty much every single day. We were only getting like on New Year's Day and New Year's Eve, we got only 2 hours of floor time to call our families. We got 2 hours on Christmas Day, and we got 2 hours on Christmas Eve to call our families. We're a sector of 40 people. So it was really ridiculous how many people had to call their families to obviously wish them Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's and everything. And there was people waiting for the phones. People had to like hang up after 15, 20 minutes being on the phone with their families. So we didn't have much time to talk to our families over the holidays. And there's obviously still lockdowns that are going down over here in Bordeaux. And we just started getting our yards back yesterday, and before yesterday we ended up getting one. And before that, it was like been like a month and a half we haven't had the outdoor court. And basically what I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to go to the Superior Court to make a judgment stating that they shouldn't be locking us up anymore because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And the fact that we should be able to go outside at all times and still have our 1 hour of exercise, physical exercise every day. And they shouldn't be locking us up in our cells. We should be able to be on the floor at all times. If they're low on staff, then it shouldn't be our problem to be basically dealing with that problem because the guards don't want to come into work or because they're going against the government because their pension, their retirement money is becoming revoked. And there's all kinds of things that are happening for the guards to not even show up to work because they're not making that much money over overtime and everything. They're doing extremely overtime. And I went into court not long ago to speak to a judge, and my lawyer ended up telling the judge how there's all kinds of lockups and everything and all this stuff. And the judge was freaking out. The judge legit ended up stating to my lawyer that this is ridiculous. There has to be a stop to this because they shouldn't be locking us up like animals and everything to people that are not even sentenced. Because me, I'm not sentenced yet, and even for people that are sentenced, they shouldn't be locking us up like we're animals in our cage. And basically telling my lawyer that everything that's going on right now in Bordeaux is extremely like illegal. She's pretty much stating that I hope your client, which is me, actually does something in Superior Court, because if it was up to me, I would shut down Bardo right at this moment, because it's ridiculous how much times that they lock us up. I have a whole paper I've been collecting since last year of November, and I could tell you in a whole month and everything, like about 70% of the time we're in lockup at all times. And the judge was like freaking out. She was like, this is not normal. Like, they shouldn't be doing this. Like, the guards have no right to lock us up just because they're not coming to work. What they could do is lock us up in our sector and not be able to walk around in the prison and be able to go, example, like, for people that need to get medication, the infirmary and everything, they won't be doing that. They would actually come straight to the sector and do the medication at the sector. But obviously they don't want to do that because it's extra work for the nurse, the infirmary, and it's extra work for the guards to call the infirmary to have them come. And they're obviously going to go against every single possibility that they could. And I sent the director of Bordeaux a letter stating that our rights are being violated. And the exact words is that your rights are not being violated. It's because of the COVID-19 pandemic that we are doing a lot of lockups, and that we can't offer you guys yard time because COVID is still present. But I don't understand why they're doing that when basically we're all tested over here. We all tested a negative. We all got our two flu shots and everything of the COVID and everything. Basically, everyone over here has their flu shot. And I don't understand why they're rejecting us to have our liberty and everything just because we're sentenced, or like me, basically, I'm not sentenced yet, but majority of the people that are in my sector right now, they're sentenced, and they're violating their rights completely. And when I call out the director, the director is saying that it's all because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Like, it's not even just Bordeaux, it's RDP too that's going pretty bad right now. We've been, like, okay for the longest time, and they're still treating us like if it's a big problem. And it's not like we're getting in contact with people from the outside. The only contact that we have from the outside is from the guards, and we always wear masks when we talk to the guards and everything, especially me. When I talk to a guard, like, when a guard's coming and speak to me, I'm like, give me a minute because I want to wear a mask on. So I grab my mask and I put on my mask and I talk to them. I know these guys are the reasons why we could actually get COVID-19.
You've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. That was Lucas, who is currently incarcerated at Bordeaux Prison on the island of Montreal. You can hear more about Lucas by checking out our episode from October 14th, 2021.
On July the 2nd, 1953, I was serving time in Tehachapi. 4 o'clock in the morning, I was sleeping in my cell. I heard a whistle blow, and I heard somebody yell, there's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. Up in cell block number 9. The trouble all started up in cell block number 4. Spread like fire across the prison floor. Warden came in with a big Tommy gun. Bang, bang, bang. Trying to stop my fun, but there's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. Up in cell block number 9.
Hi everyone, this is Gene, coordinator for the Prison Radio Show. I've done a number of opinion pieces, and here's my latest. This one here is called Life After Forever Inside. Now, the majority of long-term prisoners will one day return to society, even if they themselves didn't believe that would happen when they first started their sentences. So, what will they face after 10, 20, or more years behind bars? The same outside world they had last seen, or one they no longer know? And what about the prison world they are leaving behind? How different was it from the street? And did it change them for the better or the worse? Let's start with the prison sentence they just survived. A man or a woman gets convicted of a serious enough crime to receive a lengthy sentence in numbers or a life sentence. Life sentences can range from a minimum of 7 years for non-murder to a 10-year minimum for second-degree murder and a 25-year minimum or more for first-degree murder. Any way you want to look at it, high numbers or life sentences are just that. Many, many years behind bars. And there is no easing into prison, especially if you're going to be there for a very long time. It's like not knowing how to swim and being taken out into the middle of a lake and thrown overboard. You're on your own. Learn to swim, dog paddle, or somehow get back to shore, or sink and drown in your new hell. And the street you knew and left behind? What about that? Well, the ringing in your ears from the steel door clanging shut behind you the first time lasts a lot longer than your last mental picture of freedom. And as the years pass, memories fade to the point you have to concentrate to even recall pieces of the most significant events you thought you would never forget. Prison time is frozen time. You age, you exist, but you don't grow socially anymore. You become emotionally stunted. I've seen it hundreds of times. Cons know things have changed in the outside world, but by not personally experiencing any of these changes, they still picture the street as they did when they were last out. They believe what they did decades ago, they will just up and continue doing without missing a beat. In a way, it might be good they remain blissfully unaware of how significant the changes they missed really were. Otherwise, a lot of them would have gone insane or committed suicide. So, after living through all that, you can imagine how shocked they are when they finally get out and come face to face with cold reality. Things don't feel, seem, or look the same. Check up with the past crowd. The crime partner is now bald, 50 pounds overweight, scared of his own shadow. The old Barbie doll girlfriend is now just that, old. Some ex-cons still want to party, drink, and do drugs, just like the good old times. But the people they once knew just want to stay home, go to bed at 10 p.m., and are petrified that the police will be kicking down their door for even thinking of anything illegal. In other words, they don't view you the same way that you remembered them, but as a threat to the safe little world they built the last 20 years without sight or sound from you. In instances like this, you learn to either rebuild old relationships or you make new ones. Another problem long-term prisoners will face is the mundane necessities of life in our present society. Seems there are more of them than before and a lot more complex. And at each and every step, there is more paperwork to fill out and more personal identification needed for new and redundant services. Replacing one piece of identification is costly in money and time. Imagine living without ID for years and then having to get all your ID pieces at the same time. Frustrating isn't a strong enough word to describe the procedure. I know. I had to do it. Without a proven identity, you are a non-person. You can't open a bank account. You can't get a health card or a driver's license or a job or rent an apartment or a dozen other things. Relationships, identification, bureaucracy. Ex-prisoners are desperately trying to get up to speed on everything. And for some, no matter how hard they try to adjust, they just can't do it fast enough. On top of all this, he or she has a parole officer who will be hammering home all the above on a regular basis. There is so much pressure. It's at this point that many say, fuck it, and give up. They feel left behind and believe the only way forward is reverting to what they knew and did when last out on the street, even when that time is long gone and no longer realistic. But desperate people do desperate acts. Unfortunately, the vast majority who revert to old ways also return to the dead days, also known as prison. And the circle of hell continues. But for those who are determined to stay out, be it prison fatigue, family, or whatever drives them forward, there is more for most of them, a light at the end of the tunnel. I can only speak from personal experience, but after 27 years straight behind bars and released into a world I no longer knew, I believe I can safely say that I went through all the crap there is to face up to this point. The reason I say up to this point is that I've only been out for a couple of years, and second, even with the best of attention, who knows what the future will bring. As they say, shit happens. Now I won't give a long speech here on how you should act, think, etc. Take this whichever way you want. When I got out, I too went through all the misery I mentioned above. The reason I personally put up with it and didn't revert to crime was after spending two-thirds of my life in the federal penitentiary system, I had reached saturation of prison fatigue. I was too fucking tired of pacing tiny cells, of the clanking doors and bars, of asshole guards, parole officers, crap food, even other prisoners. Listen, it all wears on every one of us. And people deal with it in the way they do. So, for the first time in my life, I actually tried to fit into society as a citizen. It's been hard, but quite the trip so far. Now, first off, before long-term men or women get out of prison, they have to really understand that things are not the same as when they went in. Not just to say, yeah, I know things have changed, but actually let it sink in and believe it. Once you do that, you can start to picture in your mind the problems that you may face and realize things will not go as you dream. Once you see the problems, you can start looking for solutions to them. And when you are actually on the street and face these problems head on, don't get so stressed or pissed to the point that you say, fuck it, and return to prison. Now, this is easier said than done, I know that. But you have to realize that street life is as hard as prison life, and sometimes worse. And there are always new problems you will face. That's what they say when they say, welcome to the real world. And most ex-prisoners, they always want everything right now. The cars, the clothes, relationships, and lots of money. Ain't gonna happen, my friends. Not unless you do that elusive perfect crime or win the lottery. And we all know there's a pretty good chance those two things won't happen either. So, after adjusting your mindset to your new normal, taking things, and I mean all things, slowly is probably the best advice I would give any man or woman getting out of prison after a long time inside. Before my life sentence, I did several bits. Each time I got out, I wanted everything right now and acted in a way I thought was going to deliver them to me. All it did was return me to prison for longer stays. This time, I did the opposite, and slowly the tide turned to the better for me in many areas. I don't want anyone to think it was easy and fun. I won't sugarcoat it. It was fucking hard. So many times I doubted my choices and hated not having all the things I had dreamed about in prison. But I overcame the obstacles to this point. I learned to keep my expectations high while living within my means. For sure, I will aspire to bigger and better things, as we all should. But if I never reach these goals, I will endeavor to be happy and enjoy my life. Because with all these problems and hardships, being on the street instead of living pipe dreams in a cage should be the goal of all men and women leaving prison. Remember, shit happens, but it doesn't have to. To all my brothers and sisters who have survived years inside and are finally getting out to live again, I sincerely and truly wish you the best of luck. And stay strong, because I know you can do it. Okay, this has been Gene. I'll catch you next opinion piece.
The warden said, come out with your hands up in the air. You don't stop this ride, you all gonna get the chair. Two-gun Matilda said it's too late to quit. Pass the dynamite, Molly, cause madness is a lit. There's a ride going on. There's a ride going on. There's a ride going on. Up in cell block number 9.
You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com and also at prisonradioshow.libsyn.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Prison Radio Show. Parts of our show are also available through podcasting apps. Our show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, January 28th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions about anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you want to be involved in the show, feel free to contact us. Our email is prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Prisoners can also call us Collect. We have a phone number that is 514-876-3748. You're able to call Collect from Bordeaux or RDP Prison. Again, it's 514-876-3748. And for anyone on the outside who would like to contact us through the phone, this number cannot receive Collect calls. It is 438-337-8423. People in prison can also write to us. Our mailing address is The Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Virginia, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned.
Good evening, it's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chauchage, Mooneyang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, January 13th, 2022. On tonight's show, taking the temperature of Montreal's English theater scene while the ghost light is on, and a treat for fans of Dolly Parton and music. My guests tonight include three voices for our conversation about the state of the theater. Amy Blackmore of Mainline Theater and Fringe Fest.
I've been hearing that, you know, folks want everything to change. Theater works and sometimes theater doesn't. There are things happening in our institutions that are wonderful and things that aren't as well. And there's a lot of change taking place.
Mathieu Murphy-Perron of Table d'Hôte Theater.
Showing up and letting us know that there's still a public who are interested in the collective experience of sharing stories and telling tales. Please show up.
Rahul Gandhi of Quebec Drama Federation.
You start a career and then you have 2 years of everything is different and everything is uncertain. And that is another thing that I feel is happening in these next couple of months, and that has been happening. It's folks that we know, artists in the industry, just sort of taking a step outside the industry.